Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. Dedicated to Edgar Degas, 1834 to 1917, in the centennial year of his death, Volume 3 of the Conservation Division's biennial journal, Facture, Conservation, Science, Art History, focuses on the tremendous wealth of works by Degas in the National Gallery of Art collection. The first to feature the work of a single artist, this issue includes essays by conservators, scientists, and curators. It presents insights into Degas' working methods in painting, sculpture in wax, and bronze, and works on paper, as well as a sonnet he wrote to his Little Dancer. The gallery has the third largest collection in the world of work by Degas, comprising 21 paintings, 65 sculptures, 34 drawings, 40 prints, 2 copper plates, and 1 volume of soft ground etchings. Its extensive Degas holdings and conservation resources have inspired not only groundbreaking gallery exhibitions, such as Degas at the Dancers, 1984, Degas at the Races, 1998, Degas' Little Dancer, 2014, and Degas Cassatt, 2014, but also exhibitions around the world. For the public symposium, held as a centenary tribute on September 22, 2017, Harriet Stratus shared her research on Degas' 20 pastels in the Burrell Collection, Glasgow, and how, in his relentless experimentation with materials, he came to prefer pastel over oil paint.
100 years, almost to the day, since Degas' death, the art he produced continues to fascinate the museum-going public. Is it the tactile quality of his brushwork, the sensuality of his pastels, the sense of movement found in three-dimensional forms modeled from wax, or the atmospheric effects achieved by selectively wiping greasy ink from printing plates, as you just saw? Whatever the allure, we know, as museum professionals, when we contemplate mounting an exhibition of works by Degas, build it and they will come. With that dream in mind, James Robinson, the director of the Burrell Collection in Glasgow, Scotland, took the opportunity of a major refurbishment of the building to make parts of the Burrell Collection available for display at other museums. After all, with the Burrell completely closed until 2020, there would be no opportunity to showcase the museum or its collections in Pollock Country Park, and display elsewhere could raise the profile of the museum among an art-loving public who had no idea what or where the Burrell even was. Briefly, Sir William Burrell was a shipping magnate and an eclectic collector who was drawn to everything from ancient Egyptian artifacts to Chinese ceramics, medieval tapestries, stained glass, and arms and armor. He collected old master paintings, and he amassed an important collection of impressionist drawings and paintings. And among this collection of some 9,000 objects, there are 23 major works by Degas, including one of the world's greatest collections of pastels by the artist, only 2 of which have ever been shown outside of Scotland since Burrell and his wife Constance gave their collection to the city of Glasgow in 1944. Some 400 miles southeast of Glasgow, another man, National Gallery Director Gabriele Finaldi, had similar thoughts. On January 9 of this year, Robinson and Finaldi met in London to formulate a plan to bring Burrell's Degas collection to London, a plan they both knew had the potential to be fraught with controversy and resistance. I was invited as an objective third party to give my opinion on the collection's suitability for travel and display in London, based on my many years of experience in helping to organize exhibitions in Chicago and elsewhere that included pastels. Only 4 weeks after that initial meeting in London, I was already in Glasgow, accompanied by Lynn Harrison, one of the gallery's paintings conservators, to work with the Burrell's curatorial and research manager, Vivian Hamilton, and their paper conservator, Tarn Brown. Together, the four of us were in for one of the most extraordinary opportunities of my professional career, one that involved uninterrupted study of each pastel to determine what drawing materials Degas used, his methods of application, and how they differed from pastel to pastel. We also carefully assessed their condition, their stability, and whether or not they were travel worthy. The scope of Brel's Degas collection is extraordinary in that every pivotal moment of the artist's use of pastel over a period of three decades is represented. Both a draftsman and colorist, Degas' earliest pastels owe their smooth, blended surfaces to his study of 18th century pastel portraiture, while thick impasto layers of pastel interspersed with fixative characterize later works. In this pastel from around 1877, you can see the various nuanced tones of pastel blended into one another. For this, the artist used a leather or paper stump or his fingers to delicately work one color into another using a technique that we often refer to as stumping, or that's sometimes also referred to as sweetening, that was favored by the great 18th century pastelists, among them Liotard and Quentin de la Tour. I'd also like you to notice the green undertones that are readily visible in the face of the seated figure. Degas' use of green undertones comes directly from his study of early Italian Renaissance paintings, in which the use of green grounds, and I'm sure you also have seen red grounds, was very popular. Now we're going to fast forward 20 years, and we see the work of a man who is using pastel in a completely different manner by this point. The pastel is applied in a series of discrete vertical and horizontal strokes. Gone is the delicate blending of colors, replaced by a liberal use of fixative, a spray-applied adhesive used to secure layers of powdery pastel particles to each other and to the paper below. And for those of you who aren't artists or familiar with fixatives, I think the best analogy for you to think of something like hairspray. And we'll come back to this fixative thing in a little while. Looking at details from each pastel side by side, the different methods of pastel application are striking. Not only did the artist draw using two completely different techniques, he also selected two very different papers upon which to draw. The one on the left has a textured, fibrous surface to which pastel particles can cling, and the one on the right is a very smooth tracing paper. And critical to our discussion here is the degree to which the pastel particles are well secured to the paper. This correlates directly to our ability to safely transport artworks like these without risk to the drawing media. Okay, I'm going to work through some of these details with you. Looking at these details of the earlier work, several characteristics are important to note. First, Degas selected a paper with a very fibrous surface, as you can see in the detail in the lower right, where the paper fibers sit proud of the surface and provide a toothy substrate to which the pastel particles can cling. And what I'd like you to notice is this kind of surface here, and these are all paper fibers that are sticking up proud of that surface. Papers of this type were made specifically for use with pastel and were very popular at the time. They also came in a variety of colors, and Degas loved to use brightly colored papers for many of his drawings. In the upper right detail, you can see from a different angle how Degas blended the pastel colors into one another. This is the same area I just showed you from looking from the side. Note, too, in the details on the left, that the drawing is adhered to a much thicker secondary support, the edges of which are covered in black tape. This is not original. At some point, the drawing was cut away from its original mount and adhered to this secondary support. While I personally don't think any paper conservator would consider such a radical procedure today, the present mount does provide the structural stability necessary to make this work travel worthy. When we proceeded to unframe dancers on a bench, we found another thick, rigid mount. However, in this case, we were very excited to see that it was the original mount one constructed by the artist himself. Thick gray millboards like this one, with blue paper facings on the back, were ubiquitous and could be purchased at art supply stores. Once this piece of millboard was ready to take the tracing paper, Degas would bring the tracing paper to a professional mounter with whom he worked, and here he adhered several strips of tracing paper around the larger rectangular sheet in the middle. I was just looking to see, I don't think you can see that, but there is tracing paper along all four sides of the rectangular sheet in the middle. He adhered the tracing paper strips along all four sides to enlarge the overall support. Here you can see quite readily in raking light where two irregular shaped pieces of paper abut one another. Notice too how dense, compacted, and coated with fixative the pastel is, so much so that it almost looks like paint applied with a brush. Again, after close study of this work under magnification, we determined that the pastel particles were well secured to the support and that the support was structurally sound. Here I want to show you where the artist's charcoal underdrawing extends onto the secondary support. This is further evidence that the mount is original. Along the right, pentiments of the charcoal sketch related to the position of the head and shoulders of the seated dancer extend onto the millboard. The pastel here chronologically straddles the two works that I just showed you, more or less a decade later than the 1877 pastel and a decade earlier than the 1898 pastel. Drawings of this type are sometimes called pastelized drawings because in many cases, Degas had already completed a finished sketch in charcoal before he added pastel to the composition, much like the Carnegie sketch that Michelle showed you earlier. And here I'd also like to point out, if you look very carefully underneath her tutu, you can see the body in place. So in drawings like this, this is where we really can see Degas the draftsman. Here again, Degas has pieced his support together by adhering two separate pieces of tracing paper to an underlying secondary support. And you often see the pastel gathers in areas of these joins. We also see that in this composition, he's wetted the black charcoal and dispersed it with a brush. He's also altered the consistency of the pastel by pulverizing it, mixing it with water and some kind of an adhesive binder. Then he dabs it onto the paper with his fingers. The pastel strokes that were manipulated with water and those that were applied with his fingers or using a brush no longer remain powdery and tend to be well adhered to their supports. As our study continued, we saw again and again Degas' masterful use of fixative to achieve aesthetic ends. Notice the diagonal streaks of rain that fall in front of the jockeys and their horses. To achieve such sharpness in his lines of teeming rain, Degas fixed the underlying layers of pastel so that he could draw crisp, distinct lines on top of it without smudging the light blue pastel strokes into the underlying layers of red and brown. So, to quickly summarize, our protocol entailed examining each pastel under magnification and, whenever necessary, unframing it to better assess the stability of its surface as well as the stability of the support. At the same time, we examined each frame to determine its condition and structural stability. We noted the glazing that was in place, and we determined if the pastel was suitably housed in its frame. Extensive reports were written for each. We recommended that all glass be replaced with Optium, a non-reflective, non-static plexiglass. We recommended that the depth of the frames be increased so that the millboard supports could sit comfortably within them without protruding from the back. And this is a very important point. I think you can see in this pastel, this is the back of the art object, and it comes out. So this is actually the back, and you never want to see that. You want to put a wooden collar around this to increase the depth so that pastel package, if you will, sits within it rather than having this against a wall. We also recommended that there be adequate distance between the optium and the surface of the pastel to assure that the pastel would not come in contact with the glazing. This portrait of Edmond Durante is thought by many to be the most important work by Degas in the Borel collection. It's very large. And instead of paper, the artist used canvas on which he applied a combination of pastel and gouache, opaque watercolor, as well as drawn strokes of wetted pastel from the tip of a stick and powdered pastel applied with a brush. That gives you a sense here. Lynn is examining the work, gives you a sense of scale. Although these materials and Degas' methods of applications were well suited to paper, their adhesion to this canvas ground was tenuous at best in a number of areas, and in others, the upper layers of pastel and gouache had been lost entirely. And I think you can see that we have this black that you see here, this blackish brown, is actually the underlayer, so the pastel and gouache above it is gone. And here you can definitely see, where you see a shadow, the lifting flakes of pastel. This portrait would remain in Glasgow. After completing our examinations, I traveled down to London to share my impressions with the National Gallery curators and exhibition team. We charted a way forward that included the design of pastel packing cases with inner boxes like the one I show you here. Boxes like these could be inserted into even more robust outer cases to reduce vibration that the artworks could be subjected to during handling and in transit. So here I show you the pastel is in a sturdy inner box that contains padding materials, Ethafoam and Velara, and once the pastel is in place, it's a very, very tight fit, so there's no movement. Once the pastel is in this case, it's placed into an outer case. And by the way, this pastel is in a private collection in Chicago, not Glasgow. We outlined our transport and installation protocol, and I was charged with preparing detailed reports on each object, as well as recommendations for rehousing and reglazing. Unless all of this work was carried out to the letter, the pastels could not be deemed travel-worthy. With this protocol in hand, the National Gallery decided that they were willing to bear the considerable costs required to make exhibition of Burles Degas a reality. Back in Glasgow, Robinson had the formidable task of getting approval from the Burles Board of Trustees. Astonishingly, in a matter of weeks, all the pieces of the puzzle fell together and drawn in color, Degas from the Borel opened to critical acclaim only 4 days ago in London. Given 5 stars by the Guardian newspaper, the exhibition includes 21 Degas from the Borel, combined with the National Gallery's own paintings and pastels, a drawing of Russian dancers that Borel had gifted to Berwick upon Tweed, and the large composition that I showed you earlier from Glasgow's Kelvin Grove Art Gallery. As you look at these installation shots, imagine for a moment how much work was undertaken by the Borel's small team of conservators and framers over a brief 6-month period to make this exhibition a reality. Imagine, too, the exceptional care taken by the National Gallery's art handlers, conservators, and lighting engineers as they work to make real the curator's vision for the installation. Thank you.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.